This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
How many pieces of clothing do you think we buy each year? Well, the number might surprise you. Australians bought more than 1.5 billion new garments in a single year. That's about 55 items for every one of us. And a huge chunk of those clothes barely get worn before ending up in landfill. Now, a new social media trend, it's called Frugal Chic, is challenging the habit, encouraging people to buy less, choose better quality, and build what's being called a forever wardrobe. But is this actually a shift in how we think about fashion, or just another trend dressed up to look sustainable? Well, Lorinda Kramer is from Deakin University, joins us on the line. Lorinda, welcome to Drive.
Hello, Warren. It's really great to be with you this afternoon.
Is it frugal chic or frugal chic?
I say frugal chic. I'm a bit fancy, though.
Okay. Well, let's talk about it. Frugal chic. A lot of us have wardrobes full of clothes, but still feel like we have nothing to wear. What does this trend say about the way we've been shopping for clothes?
Warren, let me start maybe with, I think you've given it a really great introduction, but let me just maybe dig a little bit deeper into this frugal chic trend. So it really has been big on social media over the last few months, particularly TikTok and Instagram. Mm. And it was coined by a young British woman named Mia McGrath. And what she's trying to do with this is to refer to a careful, mindful approach to spending. And this, she suggests, should blend frugal habits with a handful of classic and really well-made investment pieces. What she's trying to do, like a lot of these other trends that are similarly thinking about sustainable fashion, is to encourage, she calls it underconsumption, and she sees that as an antidote or an opposite to this context of overconsumption, particularly for younger consumers. But actually what she's promoting isn't an end to shopping altogether. It's just more balance by cutting back in particular areas. And so, yes, it's cutting back in, and I should say more broadly beyond fashion, things like not buying a coffee at a cafe every day or the possibility of driving a much older car, but then saving your money for more luxurious purchases, a bit like you mentioned in before your introduction, where you buy good quality. And she sees that good quality as a really important part of our wardrobes, something that, yes, can make up a forever wardrobe that you can wear again and again across many years. So she's absolutely not new in encouraging this kind of spending pattern. She's not new in suggesting that we invest in quality, or what she says we should buy it nice or buy it twice. But what she is trying to do, I think, is another attempt to make us more mindful about what we buy, about reassessing the kind of deeply ingrained shopping habits that we have. Mm. And I think she's also encouraging us to push back against the idea, particularly in the moment, that more is better.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. There's something about, I mean, I've always loved the value of quality. It's been important to me. And for me personally, there's been something about holding off and thinking, you know what, I might have to spend a little bit more, but I'll wait a little bit longer. And when I make that purchase, I feel good about it because I feel like, you know what, I've got something that is going to last me a little bit longer, and I'm going to enjoy it more because I know that it does tick the box of being a better quality than perhaps the cheaper product that I may need to buy two of.
Warren, I'm exactly the same as you. I really do see the sense in buying these good quality good quality garments, knowing that they are going to last a long time. And one of the things that I've been really interested in doing, and I'd love to hear about your experiences too, is I think these pieces, these quality investment pieces that we have in our wardrobe, we do start to form a relationship with our clothes. And I think we see them as something more than just these material objects that come into our wardrobe that we throw away without a second thought. I love to see my really favorite clothes as being kind of deeply embedded with my memories, my favorite nights out, for example, a wonderful, you know, wedding or formal occasion that I attended, something that reminds me of a very close friend. I get a lot of pleasure about thinking about my clothes as more than just that material garment and having this bigger life.
I love that. So almost attaching an experience to a garment rather than just seeing it as it is.
Absolutely. And that is a really important part of one of these other big sustainable fashion movements that we've seen in the last, certainly this one has been around for about a decade, and this is the slow fashion movement. It's a global movement that is occurring around the world, and it supports individuals precisely as its name suggests, to slow down your clothing purchases. What it encourages people to do is to think about the environmental and the societal impacts of all of the purchases we make. And Warren, what I think is really fantastic about that is that it does ask us to think about the trajectories that our garments have before they reach us. You know, from their very beginning as, you know, materials, the people who constructed them, all of that process that helped them get to our wardrobe is part of how we should be thinking about our clothes. But part of this slow fashion movement is also encouraging us to form this different and deeper relationship with our clothes. I think it's something so lovely. And Warren, one of the reasons why I really love that side of this slow fashion movement is I think that it has really interesting historical parallels. And I have adored thinking about how this is nothing new. This idea around sustainable fashion has actually been with us for centuries. It's not just new in our present day, although, you know, obviously the context is very different now. We have so much access to clothing now. But if we think about, one of my favorite periods is the mid-19th century gold rush period in Melbourne and across Victoria. And it is so resonant with this idea of forming a relationship with your clothing. So people who arrived in Melbourne back in the 1850s as part of that wave of migrants coming into Australia would have only had, so for me, if I was one of those migrants, I might have only had two or three or four dresses. That was it. And that was more than enough. That was considered more than sufficient. Some of those garments were probably going to be secondhand, and they may even have been bequeathed from a mother, a grandmother, a sister, a loved one. And we have beautiful letters written in Melbourne, in Ballarat, in Bendigo from women who talk about how much they love the gowns that they're wearing because they once belonged to a dear departed relative. I find that just such a beautiful thing.
Isn't that interesting? And yet we've sort of turned that into, I don't like hand-me-downs. Now, we've almost flipped that story of how lucky am I to be able to, or how privileged am I to be able to wear this garment that my grandfather wore, for example, as opposed to, I just get hand-me-downs and the rest of the kids get new stuff.
Yeah. And I think when I was a child, I had an older sister, so I certainly didn't want her hand-me-downs. I wanted something, you know, uniquely me. I wanted something that was new and fresh. Maybe there's a little parallel we can draw now, because there is, you know, a rise in secondhand clothing at the moment. And we know that people shopping at op shops, people who are shopping at these, you know, those really beautifully curated secondhand boutiques.
Oh, they're fantastic.
So that has definitely, yes, they are so fantastic. They're one of my favorite places to look. So I think there has been a slight shift in how we think about secondhand clothes. And I think now one of the reasons is that there is a real focus on good quality secondhand clothes. Those beautiful curated boutiques, you know that everything in there is going to be good quality. And I guess as a flip side, then we also know what's going directly to op shops can tend to be more of those clothes that have been disposed of very quickly. Those, you know, fast fashion purchases that people buy very quickly without slowing down and thinking about their shopping, and then get rid of really fast. So we know that that's starting to be a very large part of what's going into op shops at the moment.
We're chatting with Lorinda.
Going directly to landfill.
We're chatting with Lorinda Kramer from Deakin University about frugal chic trend and what it reveals about our clothing habits. Lorinda, one of the things I was just thinking of then about these T-shirts that I buy for quality that lasts forever. And we're talking about, I suppose, the relationship and the value that we place in them. I found myself actually buying a special sort of sensitive, not a sensitive, but a less harsh detergent to wash them in. And then the process of, I don't put them in the dryer, I hang them up to make sure that they dry properly. So there's a whole sort of ritual around cleaning them that I apply that sort of increases the value and the respect for these clothes as well. Do you find that?
Warren, I love that too. I think we do so many similar things. So I'm the same. I have a laundry liquid that's made here in Melbourne. It's, you know, very sensitive, very gentle on my clothes. I always hang things up very, you know, neatly, precisely along the seams. But I think there is something about, yes, a sense of clothing care that does suggest the respect for the clothes that you wear. And if I can go back to my, you know, my historical parallels, mm-hmm. clothing care was enormously important for, you know, across these hundreds of years. If I go back to my gold rush period, for example, clothing care did look slightly different back then, but it really underlined, just like we're talking about now, this respect for your clothes and the knowledge that looking after your clothing very carefully would give it a much longer life. So back in that mid-19th century period, for example, people couldn't wash their clothes like we do now with our sensitive laundry liquid. What they would more often do was brush the dirt from their clothes, and they would also wear plenty of underwear underneath their garments to stop perspiration, for example, reaching the outer garment. So in that way, you didn't have to launder your clothes quite as often. But back then, they also practiced so many fascinating material interventions for this clothing care. So, for example, women at that time wore gowns that swept across the ground and the footpath, and they lined the bottom of their skirts with a really hardy braid that could withstand that sweeping of the ground. And they also had a layer inside the hem of a cheaper cloth that could be picked apart, and that could be the thing that was laundered and then stitched back in again. There were so many inventive ways of caring for clothes.
I've just got another question for you. In fact, we've got an SMS that's come in saying it's difficult for plus size people on a budget because they don't have many options to start with. And when the good quality stuff still wears out between the thighs quickly, you're going to end up buying the cheap versions. Is that the case, that people who need plus size clothes are limited in their options?
Yeah, I think there's definitely something really important to consider in that comment. I have been really interested in thinking about this, so, you know, I really appreciate you raising this. What I've started to notice, and certainly there are places here in Melbourne, for example, near me on Sydney Road, there's a fantastic jeans maker called De Jour. I don't know whether any of your listeners know about De Jour, but it and a number of other Melbourne clothes manufacturers offer a repair service. So, for example, I too wear out the thighs of my jeans. They offer free repair services, some of them, or quite heavily reduced repair services to repair the clothes that they've made. I think that's a really clever idea. And this also has what I think is a really fascinating historical parallel to here in Victoria. I'm sure that many of your listeners will be familiar with a company called Fletcher Jones.
Oh, yes.
Fletcher Jones made men's trousers to begin with when it first opened in Melbourne in 1946, just after World War II. It also made a lot of women's skirts over time, and you will be familiar with the beautiful pleated kilt-style skirts. But Fletcher Jones, for many, many years, offered what it called a refurbishing service. So it encouraged that long, long life of clothes. It kept the different cloth that it made its trousers and its skirts in, and it then offered this repair service for mending for anything that had worn through. One of the other things that I really love about that is that Fletcher Jones first started off by suggesting that every single person needed to be fitted in store for a size, and he started off with 72 sizes, and it went up to something like 300 sizes. That's in amazing. The 1960s. So everyone would be personally fitted in store, and then the life of those clothes was continued through this refurbishing service, but also through a service whereby he and his skilled repairers would adapt those as people put on or lost weight, for example. So I find that a really interesting way of thinking through clothes. And one of the ways that it was possible to do that was that clothes had much wider seam allowances than what we see in our clothes now. So clothes could be made bigger, and they could also come down to be made smaller. And we see that a lot across the last 100-150 years. Clothes that have been made bigger or made smaller, often by taking in the side seam or inserting a panel at the front or at the back. But I would love to see us really embrace the potential for that much more in the present.
Oh, I agree with you. Lorinda, unfortunately, we've run out of time because we've got to get to news. But, you know, with things going on in the Middle East as well, and, you know, potential disruptions to oil supply, which, of course, we know creates many of the artificial materials that many of our clothes are made of, we may be forced to go back to relying on some of our historical things that happened in the past to save clothes. What do you reckon?
Yeah, and I don't think it would necessarily be a bad thing to bring some of these practices back into play.
I agree. Lorinda, thanks for chatting with us.
Oh, thank you, Warren. It's a pleasure.
Thank you. That was Lorinda Kramer, lecturer in Cultural Heritage and Museum Studies at Deakin University. There you go. We can always learn from history.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.